Okay, welcome back to hour number three. Professor Dr. Eric Carlstrom is with us tonight. We're going to talk about a little different angle, not TIs tonight, so much as what's happened to the planet and how and why we should view it. It's a very interesting story. If you noticed, we ran that about a week ago now, story about 9 years in a row now. The planet has cooled every single year. It's gotten colder. Overall average temperatures. So we have a great gift here. Eric Carlstrom is a geology wizard. Geography was his forte for 30 years. So he's a man who knows about climate. Welcome back, Eric. How are you?
Oh, very good, Jeff. Thank you, and it's great to be with you again. And it is a pleasure and a relief for me to speak about this subject, because this is, climate change is something that I taught and researched during academic career. So I feel kind of like I'm coming home. I can kind of breathe deeply and relax. The whole episode in my life of trying to figure out as much as I could about the targeting and gang stalking program, you know, is kind of like going to hell and purgatory and without knowing what's going on, and then trying to figure out what is going on to shed some light on that very dark subject. But I guess I can, we can segue back. I've got five websites, and the one that I'd like to talk about tonight is something that I was deeply into before I realized I was being targeted, and that is naturalclimatechange.org. That's one of my five websites. I guess I call my little project Toto Enterprises, the little dog that pulls the curtain back. The others are gangstalking, mindcontrolcults.com, 911nwo.com, San Luis Valley Waterwatch.com, which has to do with water issues in the southern part of Colorado in the San Luis Valley, where I have a home. And then finally, my music website, ericcarlstrom.com. But of all of those, the one that is closest to my academic expertise and the one that I built up during, my years as a professor with my own research and whatnot and classroom experience is the naturalclimatechange.org. So I would invite people to, take a look at that. It's got a lot of information to help people get up to speed on a very complex topic. And I think that this is why it has been exploited as a political tool. What we have is the bastardization of the corruption of a relatively small and young science, climatology, or even a subsection of that is paleoclimatology. Climates that, over the past. And this really is the province of geologists. Quaternary geologists would be those who study the quaternary period, which is the last 2.6 million years, more or less, which coincides with what we call the ice ages. And of course, quaternary geographers are right in there, same group of people, but it is also a fairly interdisciplinary group, because you get people from the biological sciences who study pollen and tree rings, and you get people studying sea level fluctuations. You get people looking at deep sea cores at the bottom of the ocean, and there's many, many different ways to reconstruct climates of the past. The fact is, our instrumental record only goes back about 150 years. And our satellite record only goes back to 1976, and our ocean buoy record only goes back to 2003. So we're a lot like, blind men touching the elephant, trying to figure out what the patterns of climate change are for 4.6 billion years. And yet people like Al Gore, who's, absolute con man, clever
fraud,
though he is, and has made his fortune on this con. These people have essentially turned this into a global terrorism topic, where they're scaring people out of their rights and their money and their future. So I think we need to approach it both from the scientific point of view, which I certainly feel comfortable doing, because that was my career, and but also from the political point of view, to see how this young science has been co-opted and corrupted, and is serving such an incredibly important function now for, you know, King Charles, you know, all these sustainability guys, the UN, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They've had six major meetings, and they've had every year they've had meetings once a year in, since 1997. Big, big, big push by the international UN, you know, type people to use this as a launch pad into global tyranny. And all that becomes evident the more you study it. So I could just rattle on, Jeff, because, you know, I was a professor and I'm used to doing that. But please jump in and give me some your impression.
Well, I think what we should do is let's just start at the beginning here, this whole climate warming farce. When it happened, when it began, how quickly did you see through it?
Well, that's
it couldn't have taken long.
Glad you asked that question. Okay, so for myself, I have a kind of a unique background in the sense that my father was a quaternary geologist that worked with the U.S. Geological Survey, mapping the glacial history of Alaska in the 50s and 60s. And so as a kid, we would go camping all the way from Washington, D.C. area up to Alaska so he could spend all summer out in the field and map the surface deposits. And the real story he picked up on real quickly was, okay, there's glaciers in these hills, and they've been advancing and retreating. Radiocarbon dating had just been invented in 1949 by Libby at the University of Chicago. My father graduated from the University of Chicago with a PhD. So the U.S. Geological Survey had carte blanche to all the scientists in the field. For them to bring organic samples to be radiocarbon dated. So my father, Thor, was pulling back lots of samples and getting them radiocarbon dated so he could get an idea of when these glaciers were advancing and retreating and when these peat bogs, these tidal flat bogs were forming on the coast areas. And he noticed patterns that coincided with the dating that coincided with cyclical patterns that have been calculated by astronomers such as Milutin Milankovic from 1938, a genius from Serbia, who did his calculations and calculated that climate change may well vary with cyclical changes in the Earth's orbit around the sun, that three of them give you cycles of 100,000-year, 40,000-year, and 22,000-year. I could give you the names of them. One is the eccentricity, the degree of ellipticality. That's a 100,000-year cycle. It goes from basically circular to more elliptical and back. And then there's a 40,000-year obliquity cycle, which is the tilt of the Earth's axis. It's 23.5 degrees now, from 90 degrees to the parallel of the ecliptic around the sun. But it has been as shallow as 21.5 and as deep as 24.5 or 25 degrees. So it's like a top that's wobbling over a long period of time. And that's a 40,000-year cycle. And then there's the 22,000-year precession of the equinoxes. Okay, this is well known in the astronomical community, but based on Milankovitch's work, who calculated how these things would reinforce each other over time before computers, he said that this should have a real impact on climate. And, of course, we knew there were cycles of sages.
Sure. Of course, I don't know why people, excuse me, but I don't know why people don't understand that. Name one thing in life where there aren't cycles. Think about
it. Well, And my father, I have to, you know, I honor him highly. He was a tremendous scientist and a very hard worker. He loved his work. Stay up till 2 or 3 o'clock at night doing it and making his gigantic maps and gigantic charts and graphs. And it was his passion to figure out the patterns of climate change. So, you know, I kind of inherited this interest. And then when I took some climatology classes in the 70s, I started reading his work and I thought, wow, this is really interesting stuff. And so then I wound up doing something very similar. And so yeah. Between the two of us, we have about 90 years worth of research in this area. And so, you asked me when this all came down the pipe. Well, let me just say that in 1977, when I was getting my PhD at the University of Calgary, just starting there, and was doing physical geography, soils, geomorphology, glacial history, as it turns out, in Waterton Park and Glacier Park, there were two guys who did deep sea core analysis, Shackleton and Updike. And they said, okay, based on all the work we review about the deep sea cores from the bottom of the ocean around the world, we now can safely say, we can conclude that Milankovitch was right, that these 100,000, 40,000, 22,000 year cycles show up in the climatic record, which we have, pretty well dated now. And we can verify. So this becomes then a grand moment in science, much like when Wegener's theory of continental drift was proven, because it was just one of those crazy ideas until they had a mechanism for it, with plate tectonics. And so when they married the two ideas, now the scientists could understand, okay, how the continents drift. Okay, now it makes sense. We understand there's plates and they jostle and they move and they spread apart and they push together. Well, okay, so this was one of those seminal moments, 1977. I was just getting my PhD. A guy named George Kukla from the Lamont Doherty Lab at Columbia University, who I've met, was really a character. I think he's from Czechoslovakia. And he came out with a seminal paper also that year, and he said, and it was in Quaternary Science Reviews, one of the main journals in the field, and he said, okay, we can now look at the Czechoslovakian LUS sequence, which is well dated with paleomagnetism and radiocarbon dating. We can look at the deep sea core record, which is well dated now, kind of in that same club with Shackleton.
Sure.
And we can look at Milutin Milankovitch's prediction of these cycles, and we can say that, yes, the Milankovitch or astronomic theory of climate change is what drives the climate cycles, which have driven the glacial advances and retreats of the ice age. So this was, this was big news. And at least to me as a graduate student, my father had come up with this conclusion in 1961. And he was ahead of those guys. But not only was he ahead of them on that, he had married that proposition of the astronomic theory, variations in the Earth's orbit around the sun, with a guy named Pedersen out of Norway, who did some work in the early 1900s, which showed that variations in the moon's orbit around the Earth caused tidal forces, which also give periodicities. And he was able to date these peat bog formations along the coasts of Alaska. And he thought he saw the timing of those cycles. And so now we're talking about higher frequency climate cycles of about 1,700 years, 1,100 years, 550 years, which he was able to establish even back in that 1961 paper, which came out in the New York Academy of Sciences. And that was the paper that got me interested in this whole subject, because he was pulling in many, many disciplines and looking at the climatic records from all over the world. And I thought, wow, how amazing to be able to get this big picture. And this was all before computers. So 61, 77, then about that time, the whole business of global cooling had gotten some press in Time magazine. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was a Time magazine article, the coming ice age and everything. And by this time, the politics had gotten into the subject, and they were hyping it as a real disaster, kind of this fear mongering.
And well, they kind of, in a media sense, weaponized it. That's what they did.
Absolutely, they totally weaponized it to the point now, Jeff, where up in Canada they're talking about the climate camps, which sound an awful lot like the Phoenix program.
Crazy.
Torture centers during the Vietnam War. And what we're looking at now with climate lockdowns and, putting your climate credit score with your bank account. I mean, they have moved this thing into the realm of It's ludicrous from a scientific viewpoint, but it is a total tyranny sort of scenario. The idea that humans are wrecking the planet by burning fossil fuels, driving our cars, or by, you know, having cows that fart or whatever. I mean, all of this is beyond ludicrous and absurd, and yet they have managed to sell these preposterous propositions by repetition, by propaganda.
And what are they pushing? What are they pushing? And I got a little private thing I'd like to harp on. EVs, electronic, battery-driven cars, whatever you want to call them, environmentally disastrous in terms of the products that are needed to make them, and then what do you do with the batteries? How do you dispose of them? They're junk. I really loathe them. They're just awful. And Tesla today announced they were withdrawing 1 million cars for something. I didn't find out what it was, but EVs are just garbage. Stay away from them. They're going to end up charging you more to charge your EV than you will by paying $5 a gallon for gas. Just watch. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, the second law of thermodynamics, Jeff, says that every time you change, first law says that, you know, energy cannot be created or destroyed, but it can change forms. And then the second law of thermodynamics says every time it changes forms, you lose some of that energy.
All of this
energy going into our electric cars has come from the burning of coal, which drives drives the coal-fired power plant. And, of course,
I know,
you're losing energy at each one of these stages. And now you
every
add an
stage.
Extra
step. Yep.
Now you've got an extra step, you know, by plugging your car into an electrical socket. You know, the whole thing is designed by a madman, really. I see our society being taken down by people who are quite deliberate in their attempts to destroy it by turning common sense on its head, by doing things in a horribly inefficient way, because we had indeed, as you know, developed a culture which was very advanced and very efficient and based on a lot of good science and technology. And now that's being replaced with really bogus science and bogus technology, like you say, with the electrical cars. The whole green movement, is really watermelon environmentalist, green on the outside, red on the inside. It is a way to destroy America. So this really, you know, to kind of get the big picture, we talked about 9/11 last time as being the centerpiece of the phony war on terrorism. The climate change story, the catastrophic man-caused global warming or catastrophic man-caused climate change, is the centerpiece of this phony environmental movement, which is Marxism in a different wrapping and which is designed to destroy our economy. And it's so sad. You know, I am a deeply committed environmentalist myself. That's why I got into this field, because I love nature and I've enjoyed a lot of time outdoors doing fun things, being outdoors. And so I have a great regard for nature. But the people that have taken over the environmental movement are they're really ideologues. It's a religion for them. It has nothing to do with reality. It's a political tool, and it's been, as you know, it's advanced by people with very dark objectives now.
Yep.
And so to just wrap things up a little bit more in terms of the topics we've covered. Remember, I mentioned earlier that Julian Assange exposed some federal documents that said that they're going to target climate scientists at some of these United Nations meetings with honeypots and things like that, in order to make sure that the right message comes through. So what we have seen then is the really dark side of the American deep state intelligence apparatus, which works for the super elite, which is taking out the real scientists and promoting the shyster con men like Phil Jones, who is over in at the climate research unit at the University of East Anglia, making $1 million a year, and and working, you know, and doing climate fraud. And this all came out in the ClimateGate exposure of the emails from the CRU, in which it was shown that they were cooking up the books to create the impression that there is a slight increase in temperature and a slight increase in CO2 in the 20th century. I mean, this is not is not provable, really. The only way you can prove it is if you fudge the data. And this, so in those, that year, 2009, 2010 area, we had KiwiGate, same thing happened in New Zealand. We had AussieGate, same thing happened in Australia, you know, where they're taking temperatures from the month of September and they're putting them in the month of October to make it, you know, appear that there's warming in October. You know, they just, you know, just bald-faced fudging.
Understood. Yeah. All right. Hold on just a second. When we come back, let's talk about this climate cooling and how they're trying to sell it as warming and the whole scam and where this is going to go. It's got to end, but I'm not sure that we have the ability to make that happen. We're buying electric vehicles. We're playing the game. Anyway, be right back with Eric Carlstrom after this. Hold on. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Professor Eric Carlstrom about climate change. I talk about the weaponization of climate. There it is. It's unbelievable. Earth, of course, has a hot, molten core, and it has been actually cooling for the 4.6 billion years the planet has been a planet. It's cooling. Eventually, it'll cool down to the extent that it'll be too cold for life as we know it now. But by then, technology will have advanced, and we'll probably have reincarnated as a lead sentient species on the planet multiple times over, maybe 100, who knows? We've been here before. This is not the first time. That's my view. All right, so 9 straight years of cooling, not a surprise, not necessarily inherently tied to the cooling of the Earth's core, but the overall climate has been cooling. When and how, since we have no access to the mainstream media, are we going to get these goons with their global warming crap to shut up, or are we stuck with it?
Well, you go right to the very difficult question, and you know, how do we respond to this? It is a very good question. I, as an educator, of course, that was my avenue, and I had a platform. With my website, I still have a smaller platform. Once in a while, somebody wants to talk to me about this on a radio show. But yes, it's hard to compete with NASA and
NOAA.
You know, NOAA and the World Meteorological Association.
They're all lying, though. They know better. See, it's all been politicized, every damn bit of it.
It has, and it's been bought and paid for science. And it's been a multi-billion, hundreds of billions of dollars into this science fraud, which is going to have to go down as one of the greatest science frauds in history after the Lysenko science fraud of about 1930 in the Soviet Union, in which he had a better way to grow plants and agricultural products, which, of course, was not based on legitimate science. So it wound up with a massive starvation of the citizens. Stalin loved it. And then, of course, the modern corruption of the medical industry with the COVID, quote unquote, and vaccine, quote unquote, another gigantic each one worse than the other.
Each one worse than its predecessor. Agreed.
Yeah, in terms of the effects on the population, and it's very unfortunate, of course, when science is deliberately corrupted through politics and economics and intelligence agencies, et cetera. But before we get to your question, which is really, you know, the main one, the important one, I've got so many PowerPoints that are and scientific papers on this website, including some of my own papers and those of my father. And I've got many, many quotes. There was a Senator Inhofe, a Republican Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma back.
He's still in office, I think.
Could be. About 2008, he was compiling statements from real scientists, which disproved Al Gore's contention that the science was settled. of course. And here's what the research physicist Dr. John Brosnahan said. Of course, I believe in global warming and in global cooling, all part of the natural climate changes that the Earth has experienced for billions of years, caused primarily by the cyclical variations in solar output. Okay, I didn't mention that one. We have higher frequency variations in the sunspots, of course, 11, 22, 90-year cycles and more. So if we want to look for the main climate driver, it is the sun. We get 99.9999999% of our energy from the sun. And but we also, that is modulated by these astronomic variations over time, which I think we're dealing with a three-body system primarily, each of which is an electromagnetic object. I mean, the sun, we're in the atmosphere of the sun, and it's, you know, all of the solar system really is in the sun's electromagnetic.
That's a very interesting mental image. And it's quite correct. That's a very good way to look at it. And we're talking about cosmic radiation.
That's right.
All sorts of energetic releases by the sun. Very interesting. We are in the atmosphere of the sun. Interesting.
So look at this a three. And I'm speaking now to the physicists who are smarter than I in physics. Look at this as a three body system where you have the sun and the earth and the moon, each, you know, kind of like a bar magnet with the electromagnetic fields, which interact with each other so that you get, you know, resonances and you get, you know, frequencies of climate change, of temperature and moisture fluctuation. Now, the Earth is, you know, quite small compared to the sun, which is a variable star. When I first took my first climatology class in 1974, Jeff, we talked about the solar constant. Well, a few years later, we realized that the solar constant is not constant, and that over time, you know, we have cyclical variations in solar output with sunspots. So the sun is the main climate driver. It's modulated by these other astronomic features, and then the feedback mechanisms within the sun, atmosphere, ocean system, which also includes, of course, the biosphere and the lithosphere, et cetera. So it's an extremely complex system. And then to reduce this, you know, complex system, which is really so many variables that you're talking, you know, nonlinear chaotic systems, to one variable, CO2, which is a tiny, you know, it's not really a contributor at all. Dr. Reed Bryson, famous climatologist, professor of physical geography at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, who's been called the father of scientific climatology and the world's most cited climatologist, and who I knew, is a great guy, said you can go outside and spit and have the same effect as doubling carbon dioxide. Okay, so he levels the
price. Oh, that's a wonderful quote. That's really great.
Well, and, you know, as I say, I knew this guy. He was a great man, and he was a great scientist. His statement goes on, all this argument, is the temperature going up or not? It's absurd. Of course it's going up. It has gone up since the early 1800s, before the Industrial Revolution, because we're coming out of the Little Ice Age, not because we're putting more carbon dioxide into the air. And then he says, man-made global warming is a theory for which there is no credible proof. There is very little truth to what is being said, and an awful lot of religion. It's mostly a religion where you have to believe in anthropogenic global warming or else you are nuts.
Right.
I know of no vote having been taken, and know that if such a vote were taken of those who are most vocal about the matter, it would include a significant fraction of people who do not know enough about climate to have a significant opinion, which I like. You know, I mean, all opinions are not equal here. You know, Al Gore's opinion is not on the same level with Dr. Reed Bryson's, because Al Gore is a politician who has cashed in on this thing. In fact, on Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, that Bryson says, don't make me throw up. It's not science. It's not true. So we have real experts out there, but of course they tend to get kind of pushed off to the side when you have a politicized effort like this over such a long period of time. Now, going back to when I was a graduate student and you know, graduated with my PhD in 1981, this train was coming down the tracks. And I thought, oh, this is great. There's going to be lots of federal money for climate research. And little did I know, of course, that that money would then be put towards a political objective. And so that money was not honest money. It was money, you know, strings attached. We want you to come to this conclusion. And so we will hire the climate science. We'll hire the computer modelers who will come out with results that prove our point. And this then extends the old adage, there's lies, there's damn lies, and then there's statistics, to there's lies, there's damn lies, there's statistics,
that's
and then
funny.
There's computer models.
That's a great line, too. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's called garbage in, garbage out. The assumptions you put into the model determine what the conclusions are. So all these general circulation models that have been, you know, very, very expensive, Cray computers, et cetera.
Yeah.
They can, you know, they're having fun, but it's impossible to model all of the variables in the climate system. So they make approximations. And all of their models, which project 1 to 11 degree Fahrenheit warming by the end of the 2100s here, are so far proven wrong. In other words, the trends that they predicted have not come to pass. So, you know, again, this is science which is polluted, which is co-opted, which is corrupted.
A couple quick points. One, you mentioned Senator Jim Inhofe. Interesting. You know what his middle name is?
No.
Mountain. James Mountain Inhofe. He was doing some pretty interesting things 30 years ago in the Senate. He's been in there a long time. He's 87 years old now. He's been in the Senate, 94 he started, so it's about 30. But he started out doing some interesting things until one day, and I forget who he challenged. He challenged a president, and he really had an argument. It was the truth. And I said, that guy's in trouble. And about a week or two later, he was flying his single-engine private plane somewhere back there in Iowa, or wherever he is, Oklahoma now. And the propeller fell off of his plane. And he was able to glide it down and make a survivable landing. Propellers do not fall off of airplanes. The FAA has routine maintenance inspections and checks and all that. Anyway, I think he changed after that, and he's still in the Senate at 87. One of his books is called How the Global Warming Conspiracy Threatens Your Future. So he's on the same page. As you know,
he's a good man. He's a bulldog because he didn't knuckle under. You know, we see so many that get on the gravy train. You know, it's easy to get along.
Oh, yes. No, he's a real American.
The big fans are there. And if you get on that team and you just pitch your conclusions the right way, then your career is guaranteed. You know, your promotions are going to come.
Oh, your money, your career, your future, your family's future done. Now, another question. We don't have a lot of time. If they succeeded in removing or diminishing carbon dioxide on the planet, how big of a catastrophe would that be? If they really made a major effort and had significant results, we need CO2. They shouldn't be messing with the environment like this. It's wrong. It's crazy, unless the planet is being terraformed for another species to come in here.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, some of the good research that came about during this whole process was a lot of legitimate research on the carbon cycle. We know, approximately how many billion tons of carbon are stored in rocks, the limestone and the dolomite, in the oceans, in the forests, and in the biosphere, in the atmosphere, which is a fairly small part, and in the soil. And we know that the atmosphere and the ocean are constantly exchanging carbon dioxide, and they are in equilibrium. So if we were to double the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is just 4 molecules per 10,000, it's about 380 parts per million. 380 parts per million wow. of the molecules in the air yeah. are carbon dioxide. In fact, that is a tiny percentage of 7% or something of the, or 25% of the total greenhouse effect, depending on where you are. Most of the greenhouse effect is in water vapor. And the amount of carbon dioxide that's added to the atmosphere due to human activity is only about 3%. And so, you know, humans have very, very, very little impact on the carbon cycle, even though, and this is just one of the many, many lies. But let me just give you a little of the input on one of my many, many PowerPoints here. About 210 billion metric tons of CO2 are added to the atmosphere each year from all sources. Human activities add about 7 billion metric tons, or about 3% of the total. Other sources, 97%, are oceans, vegetation, soils, and volcanoes. And, you know, I thought, okay, this is good. We need this kind of, you know, knowledge. But unfortunately, the, you know, the spinmeisters kind of have the last word on interpreting these things. But, you know, we know volcanism is another main contributor to climate change, because when we have a large volcanic eruption, it throws mm-hmm. a lot of atmospheric dust into the, you know, carbon and other things into the atmosphere, which blocks the sun and cools the climate. We've had lots of examples in the past. And some very legitimate researchers like Reed Bryson thought that this was one of the main causes of cyclical giant climate changes, was cyclical periods of increased volcanicity. Others, like my father, find other mechanisms for the cycle. So, you know, the science is not settled by any means. And that's another travesty with this. I've got a little funny little cartoon here, Jeff, in my website on one of my...
We got a little piece of music, too, if you want to play it. We need to make room for that.
Okay, yeah. Since we've talked about Reed Bryson, let's play this piece of music. Reed Bryson was the president of the American Quaternary Association, AMQA, okay. which is an mm-hmm. interdisciplinary group, while I was treasurer back in the 80s. So we got to know each other, and he turns out he's a bit of a poet. And he gave me a couple of his poems one time. He said he knew I was, you know, I was a guitar player and a musician. So he said, why don't you put these to music? So here, let's play one of these songs to show that these scientists are real people. And, you know, they have their poetic side, and I'm sure they have their.
So these are his lyrics.
These are his lyrics, and it's my melody, and I'm singing. Yeah. And playing.
Very good. Okay.
Called Song of a.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Did you want to say something else about?
It's just called Song of an Earthman, and this is really an Earthman. Actually, two.
This is the 243 song.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here we go.
I'm an Earthman who knows the song of the wind. The land is my lover. Sun is my friend. I roar with the tempest. I chat with the breeze. I dance with the flowers. Commune with the trees. I awake with the springtime. I grow with the rain. I'm a mountain giant. I'm a dwarf on the plain. I laugh with the burble of fresh mountain rills. I sigh with the beauty of cool water still. I soar with the eagle. I dive with the moon. I brave with the headland and drift with the dune. Thank you. time and open my heart in stanzas of rhyme. I'm an earth man who knows the song of the wind. Is my lover, the sun is my friend, the land is my lover, the sun is my friend.
Nice. Lyrics by Dr. Reed Bryson, one of the world's top paleoclimatologists, and Eric Carlstrom. Picking that banjo.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a nice mix.
It is a nice. Thank you very much. That's kind of a sweeter, simpler era. It harkens back to, you know.
Yeah.
He's a genuinely nice guy, very friendly, obviously extremely competent in his field. And, you know, nobody has all the answers. And I actually organized one or two professional meetings or sections thereof. On topics, and invited him and had him come to speak on his conclusions. And so we got to know each other a bit. And so he's one of the many great scientists that I've gotten to know, the real environmentalists, not these phony baloney environmentalists like Al Gore. Who
did he get to hear your putting this to music and singing it? Is he still with us?
I don't think he's with us. No, I think he would have died, maybe long 25 years or something like that. I think before he died, I did send him a tape of this song. Yeah, yeah.
Well, very good, very good. Jim Mars was, for those of you who remember Jimmy, I'm sure most all of you do, was a very dear friend, and I have his banjo. It's not 10 feet from me right now.
Oh,
it's real
Jim
honored to have
the banjo player, huh?
Oh, yeah, not really a player, just a picker and a strummer. And he played it on the program one night. It was fun, and we always had fun.
Well, it's an American instrument, invented here and developed here, really. And I get very patriotic about some parts of America, and that's one of them.
Nice, very nice. All right, now let's get back to my question.
Yes.
How do we stop this crap? Without access to the mainstream liars? It's very difficult. Short answer.
Jeff,
60 seconds max.
I think the people have enough common sense. I had students who came to me, you know, at different ages and when I was teaching college, and many of them had the common sense, especially the, you know, the farmers and the hikers and the skiers.
Oh, yeah.
The outdoor people.
Yeah.
They know at a gut level that this is bullshit, nonsense, you know. And I think that the same thing with 9/11. You know, these are two topics I've written extensively about that are obvious lies to somebody who wants to think things through.
Sure.
And I think a lot of Americans have thought it through. Only 1-2% of the American public regard climate change as an issue that they need to worry about. So the powers that be
and that's correct.
This on us. So it's I think in a way they've already lost the battle, which is why I think they're hitting us with so many draconian tragedies at once. This is just one of their lines of takedown for the public of the world.
You got it.
I think in a sense they've lost this battle already. I was just one of many to help just expose the obvious really here. But as an ancillary, I get to do my profession and share what I've learned, and it's exciting and fun. It's a fascinating field, climate change, and there's
very
more
good.
To learn.
Thank you, Eric. Very good, and nice music. So we will talk to you in a couple of weeks, I guess. Hopefully,
well, hang in there, my friend. This is a very exciting rocky road we're on now. But, all the best and good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Eric. Take care. Eric Carlstrom, Professor Carlstrom, is with us twice a month. And we'll take a break and be back with you tomorrow night in 21 hours. Thank you for being here. Take care and be safer. Talk tomorrow.